Okay. So, let's continue from yesterday. So I want to continue about this idea of how to overcome defilements and how to overcome obstacles in the mind. And then once I've done this last sutta, we can go back to where we left off before in the gradual training. Yeah.
And where
will you be? I'm going to continue on that. Okay. So. So this is what it says. Monks, there are these five themes that should often be reflected upon by a woman or a man, by a householder or one gone forth. What five? A woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth should often reflect thus. I am subject to old age. I am not exempt from old age. A woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth should often reflect thus. I am subject to illness. I am not exempt from illness. A woman or a man, a householder or one going forth, should often reflect thus. I am subject to death. I am not exempt from death. A woman or a man, a householder or one going forth, should often reflect thus. I must be parted and separated from everyone and everything dear and agreeable to me. A woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, should often reflect thus. I am the owner of my kamma, the heir of my kamma. I have kamma as my origin, kamma as my relative, kamma as my resort. I will be the heir of whatever kamma, good or bad, that I do.
Mūki ir piecas tēmas, kuras bieži jāpārdomā sievietē vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam. Kuras piecas? Sievietē vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam, bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu pakļauts vecumam, es neesmu atbrīvots no vecuma. Sievietē vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam, bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu pakļauts slimībām, es neesmu atbrīvots no slimībām. Sievietē vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam, bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu pakļauts nāvei, es neesmu atbrīvots no nāves. Sievietē vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam, bieži jāpārdomā tā. Man būs jāšķirs no visiem un visa, kas man ir dārgs un patīkams. Sievietē vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam, bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu savas kamas īpašnieks, savas kamas mantinieks, kam ir mani izcelšanās, kam ir mans radinieks, kam ir mans patvērums, es būšu mantinieks, jau kādai kamai, kuru rādu, labai vai sliktai.
Okay, so this, I hope you can remember at the very beginning here, I was talking about the eight precepts and how the eight precepts work here. And the fifth one of those eight is the one about not drinking here. And I said, of course, that this is about being clear, being sober, and not being intoxicated, so you have a clarity of mind.
Un pašā retrīta sākumā es runāju par astoņiem uzvedības noteikumiem, un ja jūs atceraties, un piektais no tiem runāju par atturēšanos no apreibinošu vielu un alkoholu lietošanas, un tur tā pamatdoma bija, ka mums ir nepieciešams skaidrs, dzidrs, uztvertspējīgs prāts.
But it's not just drugs and alcohol that cloud your mind. It's also how you look at the world. If you look at in the world in the wrong way, it's like you get intoxicated by, in this case, by feeling young, feeling alive, all of these things. If you look at them in the wrong way, it's the same kind of intoxication that you can have with alcohol or drugs.
But tas, kas izkropļo mūsu realitātes uztver, nav tikai narkotikas vai alkohols, mūsu realitātes uztveri apmiglo arī tas, ja mēs esam aizraujušies un pārņemti ar jaunību vai citām lietām.
So the purpose of these reflections here is basically to clear the mind, to clear the mind of any sense of being like intoxicated. Intoxicated means that you cannot see clearly, basically. Yeah.
Un šo pārdomu ir padarīt prātu skaidru un attīrīt no jebkāda veida saindēšanās.
So the interesting thing here is one of the rare sutras where the Buddha specifically mentions, he mentions a woman and a man, and he also mentions a householder and one somebody gone forth. So what this indicates is that this is a very kind of foundational thing here. When he specifically mentions it applies to everybody, it means it's a very kind of foundational thing in the spiritual life to reflect in this way here.
Interesantā lieta šeit ir tas, ka mums specifiski min atsevišķi gan sievietes, gan vīriešus, gan laicīgos cilvēkus, ne tikai mūkus, un tas norāda uz to, ka šī ir ļoti būtiska un pamatos liekamā praksa, kas attiecas uz visiem.
Okay, so let's have a look at these things. So this is the first one here. For the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man or a householder or one gone forth often reflect thus? I am subject to old age, I am not exempt from old age. In their youth, beings are intoxicated with their youth, and when they are intoxicated with their youth, they engage in misconduct by body, speech and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, the intoxication with youth is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth often should reflect in this way. I'm subject to old age, I am not exempt from old age.
Un tātad pirmā pārdoma, kāda labuma dēļ sievietē vai vīrietim, laicīgajam cilvēkam vai mūkam, bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu pakļauts vecumam, es neesmu atbrīvots no vecuma. Jaunībā būtnes ir apreibinātas ar savu jaunību. Un kad tās ir apreibinātas ar savu jaunību, tās nododas sliktai uzvedībai savu ķermeni, runu un prātu. Bet, kad cilvēks bieži pārdomā šo tēmu, apreibums ar jaunību ir pilnīgi atmests vai samazināts. Šī labuma dēļ sievietē vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu pakļauts vecumam, es neesmu atbrīvots no vecuma.
One of the problems when you are young is that you tend to feel, you don't think it maybe, but you feel as if this is going to go on forever. Yeah.
Viena no tām problēmām, kas pastāv jaunībā, ir, ka mums ir tāda sajūta, ka šī mūsu jaunība turpināsies bezgalīgi.
It's very difficult for a young person to think of themselves as old or to understand that old age is also part of them in a sense.
Un jaunam cilvēkam ir grūti pieņemt to, ka viņš kādreiz varētu kļūt vecs un iztāvoties, ka arī viņu var piemeklēt vecums.
But the reality, of course, and everybody understands this, if you think about it, it's very obvious. But the reality is that if there is youth, you must be old age. Because the idea of youth only makes sense in contrast to old age.
Bet to var saprast tik viens, ka jaunības pastāvēšana ietver sevi arī novecošanu. Un tātad nav iespējama jaunība bez novecošanas.
So wherever there is youth, you must also be old age.
Un tādējādi visur, kur ir jaunība, neizbēgam parādās arī vecums.
So if you can say that the reality of this body, or the reality of existence, is that old age is already here, it's already within you, it's just waiting to ripen, but it's actually already there. It's just as much part of you, old age, as youth is part of you.
Un var teikt, ka faktiski, ja mums ir ķermenis, tad un tas ir jauns, tad neizbēgam tajā jau saliekies novecošana un vecums, un tā ir mūsu eksistēšanas daļa, kas ir nabīga.
So you can, in a sense you can say that you're already, in one way you're already old, because one day it must happen. In one way you're already young. These things are always part of us at the same time.
Savā ziņā, mūsos jau pastāv vecums, respektīvi kādien tas pienāks, un arī mūsos jau kurā laikā pastāv arī jaunība, jo tā ir notikusi.
So think about yourself. What is it like to be old? When you get old, what does that feel like? And when you are really old, you know, things start to fall apart, right? You can't really see, your eyes start not to work anymore, your hearing doesn't work very well, your legs start to get wobbly, you can't walk properly, you have to walk with a stick, you start to get crooked and bent over. And basically, the body starts to fall apart. It's not a very nice thing when this happens.
Un tad mēs varam iztēloties, kas notiek ar vecumā, un mēs sākam sliktāk redzēt, mūsu dzirdi pavainās, mūsu kājas vairs nav tik spēcīgas, mēs sākam iet nestabilā, drebelīgā veidā, un visas šīs lietas nāk kontaktā ar vecumu.
So when you see an old person, you can reflect, well, this is me, I'm like that, I have the same nature.
Un kad mēs redzam kādu vecu cilvēku, mēs varam pārdomāt, tas esmu es, man ir gluži tāda pati daba kā šim veciem cilvēkam.
And what that does, it takes away the sense of disgust at old age, or disgust that, you know, sometimes when you see old age, you feel slightly repelled by it. But there's no need to be repelled by these things. This is just the way things are. And when you look at it that way, it takes away the sense of pride, the sense of intoxication. I am young, I am different. And you realize, actually, there isn't really any difference there.
Un, ja mēs spējam tā tieši paraudzīties ar šo vecumu un veciem cilvēkiem, tad tas palīdz atbrīvoties mums no nepatikas, no pretīguma pret vecumu, jo mēs saprotam, ka arī mums tas neizbēgam piemeklēs, un tas palīdz atbrīvoties mūsos no lepnības un no šīs apriekšanas ar savu jaunību.
And this creates kind of like a balance in the mind. The mind becomes more balanced. It doesn't become so one-sided. The idea is not that you should go and, you know, go to the other extreme and kind of think of yourself as an old person or whatever. The idea is just to balance things out so they become more neutral. And when things are more neutral, you don't go to excesses, you don't do stupid things because of that kind of wrong impression you have.
Un šo pārdomu mērķis ir radīt līdzsvaru prātā un radīt līdzsvarot attieksmi. Mērķis nav tās, lai mēs nepārtraukt sevi uztvērtu par kaut kādiem bečukiem. Mērķis ir tās, lai mēs neieslīgtu kaut kādas apriekšanas dēļ pārmērībās un galvībās.
And it gives you a sense of gratitude, right? You think, okay, I'm still strong here. My body is still good. So it gives you a sense of gratitude that you still have that sufficient youth in you to be able to do what you want to do. So you are grateful for this opportunity. And it also reminds you that old age, often it comes very fast. And because it comes very fast, you know that now is the opportunity. I must take the opportunity while I still have it.
Un šo pārdomu rezultātā mēs gūstam arī pateicību par to stāvokli, kāds mums ir šobrīd, jo mums vēl ir pietiekoši daudz spēka kaugos, lai mēs varētu paveikt to, ko mēs gribam un kas mums ir nepieciešams. Un tas palīdz apzināties to, ka vecums var pienākt ļoti ātri un tāpēc ir nepieciešams paspēt izdarīt to, ko mēs gribam izdarīt.
Life is very short, right? It passes very fast. When I think about myself, it seems like yesterday I was only 20. But actually, it's actually quite a long time ago now. And this is the way life is. It goes very fast. Sometimes it's good to speak to people who are older, and they will tell you how fast it goes.
Un tas palīdz mums saprast, cik dzīve ir ļoti īsa un cik laiks paiet ātri. Man pašam šķiet, ka es vēl tikai vakar biju 20 gadus vecs, bet tas laiks ir jau krietni aiz muguras, un mums var palīdzēt tas, ka mēs šodien parunājamies ar veciem cilvēkiem, un viņi mums pastāstīs, ka laiks aizskrien ļoti ātri.
And there is a nice sutta, it was one of my favorite suttas in the Anguttara Nikaya, and this sutta, it talks about a long time ago, there was this spiritual practitioner, and he had some very high samadhi attainments, and his teaching to his disciples were, life is short and full of suffering. Yeah.
Un viena no manām mīļākajām sutām ir tā, kurā tiek runāts par laiku, kas bija sen apakaļ, kad bija kāds praktizētājs, kas bija iedarījums ziņā samādī un stāstījis mācakļiem par to, ka dzīve paiet ātri un tā ir īsti.
So life is short and full of suffering here. And then the sutta continues and says, but in those days, lifespan was 60,000 years, and there was only three kinds of illness, hunger, cold, I think, hunger, thirst, cold and heat, and having to go to the toilet. Those were the only illnesses people had.
Un tātad šī sutra runā par laiku, vai šis praktizētājs runā par laiku, kas ir ļoti sens un krietni pirms mums, un šis mentālais praktizētājs stāsta, ka dzīve ir īsa, kaut arī laiks piet ātri, kaut arī tajā laika periodā, ko viņš aprakstu un par kuru stāstu dzīvi ilgi 60 tūkstoši gadu. Un vienīgās problēmas, ar ko tomēr cilvēki saskārās, bija izsaukums, slāpes, augstums un karstums un nepieciešamība doties uz to tolietu.
So 60,000 years, right? Life is short. So that puts things in perspective. And it's probably true, though. You know, even 60,000 years, it probably goes actually very fast. And of course, now, these days, if you become 100 years older, that's considered a very old age. So again, it goes very, very fast.
Tas palīdz lietām paraudzīties plašākā perspektīvā, kā arī 60 tūkstoši gadu priekš cilvēkiem liekas īs laiks, un kur mēs varam salīdzināt to ar mūsdienām, tad pat 100 gadu tiek uzskatīti par ļoti cienījumu un lielu vecumu, tā kā dzīvei ir tendence būt ļoti īsai.
Okay, so let's go on to the next one. So this is about illness. And for the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, often reflect thus, I'm subject to illness, I'm not exempt from illness. In a state of health, beings are intoxicated with the health, and when they are intoxicated with the health, they engage in misconduct by body, speech and mind. For when one often reflects upon this theme, the intoxication with health is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, should often reflect thus, I am subject to illness, I am not exempt from illness.
Un tad otrā tēma ir par slimībām. Kāda labuma dēļ sievietai vai vīrietim, laicīgam cilvēkam vai mūkam bieži jāpārdomā tā, es esmu pakļauts slimībām, es neesmu atbrīvots no slimībām. Kad būtnes ir vesels, tad tās ir apreibināts ar savu veselību. Un kad tās ir apreibināts ar savu veselību, tās nododas sliktai uzvedībai caur ķermeni, runu un prātu. Bet, kad cilvēks bieži pārdomā šo tēmu, apreibums ar veselību ir pilnīgi atmests vai samazināts. Šī labuma dēļ sievietēm vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu pakļauts slimībām, es neesmu atbrīvots no slimībām.
So again, you have this idea that health and illness, they are just opposite sides of the same coin, right? So if there is such a thing as health, there must almost also be such a thing as illness. So one thing implies the other. So if you are healthy, you know that the illness is just behind the surface.
Un tātad runa par veselību un slimībām, un mēs varam redzēt, ka tās sakāli ir vienas monētas divas puses, ja pastāv viena, tad vienlaikus tā norāda uz otru, un tiecīgi viena nevar pastāvēt bez otras.
It reminds me of the story which Adam Brown, my teacher in Australia, he always says that when you go to the doctor, you shouldn't go to the doctor and say, something is wrong with me. You should say, something is right with me, I'm sick today.
Es atceros šajā sakarā kādu stāstu no Aģena Brauna, kurš ierosināja dodoties pie ārsta, nevis sūdzēties, ka lūk, ar mani ir noticis kaut kas slikts, bet redzot, beidzot ar mani viss ir tā kā tam ir jābūt, es esmu saslimis.
And when you think like that, You think that, wow, how wonderful it is, I'm healthy here. You just don't know when things are going to turn around, right? Sometimes as a monk, one of the nice things about being a monk is that often you go to the hospital, you go to, you know, people die or people are sick. And you see that people of any age, any time, can get very, very serious illnesses.
Un tādējā šīs padomas mums palīdz novērtēt to stāvokli, ka mēs esam veseli un kādas iespējas tas mums pavērt. Un mūkiem nereti nākas doties uz dažādām vietām, kur var redzēt cilvēkus, kas mirst vai kas ir slimi.
So you...
Un tā ir liela iespēja tad ikdienā saskarties ar realitāti, ka cilvēki slimo un mirst arī ne tikai vēlā vecumā, bet arī snotveļ agrā vecumā.
So then you have a sense of gratitude, right? Wow, wonderful, I'm healthy. Who knows how long it's going to last? This is my opportunity, this is my chance. Time is short, you never know if the opportunity comes back. Now I have the opportunity. Now is the time to do what is good, to do what is right.
Un tas rada mūsos pateicības izjūtu par to, ka mēs esam veseli, mēs nevaram zināt, cik ilgi tas tā turpināsies. Un tāpēc mums ir jāizmanto tā iespēja un laiks, kas mums ir šobrīd.
Okay, next one. And for the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, often reflect thus, I'm subject to death, I'm not exempt from death. During their lives, beings are intoxicated with life, and when they are intoxicated with life, they engage in misconduct by body, speech and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, the intoxication with life is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, should often reflect thus, I am subject to death, I am not exempt from death.
Kāda labuma dēļ sievietē vai vīrietim, laicīgajam cilvēkam vai mūkam bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu pakļauts nāvei, es neesmu atbrīvots no nāves. Kad būtnes ir dzīves, tad tās ir apreibinātas ar savu dzīvību. Un kad tās ir apreibinātas ar savu dzīvību, tās nododas sliktai uzvedībai caur ķermeni, runu un prātu. Bet, kad cilvēks bieži pārdomā šo tēmu apreibumus ar dzīvību, tiek pilnīgi atmests vai samazināts. Šī labuma dēļ sievietē vai vīrietim laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu pakļauts nāvei, es neesmu atbrīvots no nāves.
And this one is probably the most powerful one. This is more powerful than reflecting on old age, more powerful than reflecting on illness. Why? Because death is more complete, more final, more absolute, and you can be absolutely sure that you're going to die.
Un šīs iespējams ir spēcīgākās pārdomas no visām, pat vēl spēcīgākas par pārdomām par jaunību un par veselību, jo tas mums skaidri liek apzināties, ka mēs esam mirstīgi.
And also the reflection on what was the death in Latvia?
Nāve.
Nāve, death. Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought I heard something else, but anyway, okay. So, and the thing about death is also it is a reflection that the Buddha talks about a lot in the suttas. You see it again and again. So it's actually a very important part of the teachings of the Buddha.
Būda atkal nakal runā par nāvi.
So, because of that, because it is an important part in the teachings, it is actually something that obviously the Buddha singles out as having a particular value.
Un tā kā mēs runām, ka tas tik bieži atkārtojas sutās, tad mēs saprotam, ka Buddha to vēlas izcelt.
And it's very powerful when you think about death, when you know you're going to die. And the point is, you have to make it real, right? It can't just be kind of, I'm going to die in some kind of light fashion. It has to be real. And remember that you don't know when it's going to be here. Death is very unpredictable. It comes when you don't expect it. It comes to young people. It comes to old people. You don't know when it's going to be here. And unless, if you are not prepared to die today, then when the day comes, you are going to die, then also you will not be prepared.
Un mēs nezinām, kad mēs nomirsim, un šī nāve var pienākt visnegaidītākajā brīdī, un ja mēs neesam gatavi nomirt šajā brīdī, tad pastāv liela iespēja, ka mēs nebūsim gatavi nomirt arī tad, kad pienāks nāves brīdis.
So there is a very powerful thing here. If you're going to die, imagine you're going to die tomorrow. What is that going to do? What does that do to your mind?
Un ir spēcīgi iedomāties, kas ko mēs darītu, kas notiktu, ja mums nāktos nomirt rīt, kas notiktu ar mūsu prātu.
What happens if you think about it? What happens if you're going to die tomorrow? Is that you don't get angry with people anymore, because it's like you're starting to disconnect from the world, right? You no longer have that same connection to the people, to the world around you, because you know you're going to pass away. You know you cannot have that connection anymore. So it's like your mind is forced to disconnect. And when you disconnect, what happens is that because the attachments go away, the desires that relate to this world also start to disappear, and any anger and negativity you may have also disappears.
Un tas, kas notiek, ja mēs pieņemam šādu iespēju, ka mēs varam nomirt jau rīt, ir, ka faktiski mēs pārstājam dusmoties, jo mēs saprotam, ka tas priekš mums nav vairs svarīgi, mums vairs neuztrauc tās attiecības, kas mums sagādā problēmas, jo mēs zinām, ka tūlīt tās tik un tā izbeigsies, un mēs sākam atsaistīties no tā, kas mums ikdienā varbūt šķita svarīgs, un tādējādi zūd mūsu pieķeršanās, un zūdot tā, zūd arī mūsu vēlmes, tas, kas mums parasti šķita tik ļoti nozīmīgs.
So when you use this reflection in a nice way, you become very peaceful. It's a very beautiful reflection. The idea of death is not supposed to be frightening or bad. It's supposed to be beautiful. So if you do it in the right way, how do you feel? You feel at peace. You feel relaxed. You feel detached from the world. You feel you don't have a certain involvement with the world. And that is when you know that this reflection on death is actually working in the right way.
Un tad šīm pārdomām par nāvi faktiski vajadzētu būt tādam nomierinošam efektam, jo mēs sākam uz lietām skatīties mierīgāk, mēs vairs nepieķeramies tik ļoti, kā mēs to darījām agrāk, un ja mēs pamanām, ka mūsos zūļ šīs negatīvās attieksmes un palielinās mierīgs skatījums uz notiekošo, tas nozīmē, ka mūsu pārdomas par nāvi iedarbojas pareizā veidā.
So you think to yourself, one day it's going to be tomorrow. One day, tomorrow I'm going to die. Yeah. Now that day could be today. If I'm not ready today, I'm not going to be ready when it actually is tomorrow.
Un mēs varam pārdomāt, ka kādu dienu pienāks tas brīdis, ka rītdiena patiešām būs tā, kad es nomiršu, un mēs varam pārdomāt, nu, kā būtu, ja tā diena, kad es nomiršu, patiešām būs rītdiena.
So this is how the contemplation of death, it kind of clears your mind of all the rubbish, of all the nonsense that we go around thinking about.
Un tas palīdz atbrīvot prātu no visām tām grazām muļķībām un visa liekā, kas mums parasti dzīvojas pa prātu.
Okay, let's go on to the next one here. And for the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, often reflect thus, I must be parted and separated from everything and everyone dear and agreeable to me. Beings have desire and lust in regard to those people and things that are dear and agreeable, and excited by this lust, they engage in misconduct by body, speech and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, the desire and lust in regard to everyone and everything dear and agreeable is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for this sake, for this benefit, that a woman or man, a householder, one gone forth, should often reflect thus, I must be parted and separated from everyone and everything dear and agreeable to me.
Kāda labuma dēļ sievietēja vai vīrietim, laicīgajam cilvēkam vai mūkam bieži jāpārdomā tā. Man būs jāšķirs no visiem un visa, kas man ir dārgs un patīkams. Būtnēm ir vēlma un iekāra pēc cilvēkiem un lietām, kas tām ir dārgs un patīkams, un stimulētas ar šo iekāru tās nodotas sliktai uzvedībai caur ķermeni, runu un prātu. Bet, kad cilvēks bieži pārdomā šo tēmu, vēlme un iekāra pēc cilvēkiem un lietām, kas ir dārgs un patīkams, ir pilnībā apmest vai samazināt. Šī labuma dēļ sievietēm vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam, bieži jāpārdomā tā. Man būs jāšķirst no visiem un visa, kas man ir tāds un patīkams.
So this is very similar to the death contemplation. When you die, you know that you're going to have to give everything up. This is just more specific. You're focusing directly on those things that you're going to be separated from.
Un šis lielā mērā ir ļoti līdzīgs tam, ko mēs darām nāves pārdomās. Šeit mēs vienkārši daudz specifiskāk pārdomājam to, no kā mums nāksies šķirties, no tā, kas mums ir dārgs un patīkams.
So when you remember this, then you don't hold on so tightly. You don't hold on so tightly to the people in your life. You don't hold on so tightly to your possessions. And then when you do that again, you feel more peaceful, you feel more at ease.
Un, ja mēs redzam šīs pārdomas un tās atstājas mums iespējas, tad mēs vairs neturamies tik ļoti pie cilvēkiem un saviem īpašumiem, un tas padara mūs daudz brīvākus mūsu attieksmē.
Okay, so let's go to the last one. And for the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, often reflect thus? I am the owner of my kamma, the heir of my kamma. I have kamma as my origin, kamma as my relative, kamma as my resort. I will be the heir of whatever kamma, good or bad, that I do. People engage in misconduct by body, speech and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, such misconduct is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, should often reflect thus. I am the owner of my kamma, the heir of my kamma. I have kamma as my origin, kamma as my relative, kamma as my resort. I will be the heir of whatever kamma, good or bad, that I do.
Kāda labuma dēļ sievietēm vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam, bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu savas kamas īpašnieks, savas kamas mantinieks, kamma ir man izcelšanās, kamma ir mans radinieks, kamma ir mans patvērums, es būšu mantinieks, jeb kādai kammai, kur varētu labai vai sliktai. Cilvēki nododas sliktai uzvedībai caur ķermeni runu un prātu, bet kad cilvēks bieži pārdomā šo tēmu, šāda slikta uzvedība tiek pilnīgi atmesta vai samazināta. Šī labuma dēļ sievietēm vai vīrietim, laicīgiem cilvēkam vai mūkam, bieži jāpārdomā tā. Es esmu savas kamas īpašnieks, savas kamas mantinieks, kamma ir man izcelšanās, kamma ir mans radinieks, kamma ir mans patvērums. Es būšu mantinieks, jeb kādai kamai, kur varētu labai vai sliktai.
This is just to remind you that you are creating your own future, right? Not only your future, but also your present, but particularly the future. It's up to you to create that future in the right way.
Un šīs pārdomas liek mums atcerēties, ka mēs esam tie, kas paši radām savu nākotni, paši arī to nosakām.
So, if you want a good future, then you have to do the right thing to create that good future.
Un ja mēs vēlamies radīt sev labu patīkamu nākotni, tad mums ir jāveic nepieciešamās labās lietas, lai tas varētu būt iespējams.
Okay, I don't think I will say anything more about that. Maybe we can just move on to the other sutta. Again, does anybody have any questions about this one before we move on?
Es domāju, ka ar šo būs pietiekam, varbūt tādiem ir kādi jautājumi par šo konkrētu sutta.
Everybody happy? Yeah? Okay. So let's go back to the gradual training that we were working on before. So this has been like a detour from the gradual training, and now we can come back to the gradual training again. So what we were looking at before in the gradual training was this idea of sense restraint, how to avoid and negative emotions to arise due to the impressions we get through the senses. So all of the things that we have looked at in the meantime, they have been like using wisdom, how to use wisdom to have clarity of mind, to understand how we should react in these kind of circumstances.
Un tad, kāds lietas, ko mēs esam apkaukojuši, kopš mēs beidzām izskatīt šo pakāpenisko treniņu, bija saistīts ar gudrības aspektu, respektīvi, kā pareizi izprast lietas, kā tās, kā pareizi attīstīt gudrību.
So this idea of all this kind of this way of thinking is that as you build up this way of thinking, as you think in this way very often, you're able in daily life, you're able to see that, okay, I'm about to get angry with somebody, I'm about to get desire for something which is no good. And because of all the wisdom, all the reflection you have done in the meantime, you're able to stop that before it actually arises.
Un tātad tas, ko mēs aplūkojām, bija šis, šīs pārdomas par to, kā mēs varam nonākt pie dziļākiem secinājumiem, kas atstās labvēlīgu iespaidu un kas, kas radīs negatīvu iespaidu un tādējādi, kā mēs varam atturēties un atbrīvoties no dusmām, saprotot, kā negatīvu iespaidu tās atstāju un līdzīgi arī, kā visas negatīvās lietas atstājas mums negatīvu iespaidu.
But it only works if it's real, it has to be real. It can't just be a theory, you know, the theory that, you know, okay, when somebody has a good quality, it's like a theory in the mind. It actually has to be real. You really have to understand that there is a danger involved with anger, and you have to understand that almost from personal experience, seeing it inside yourself. And when you see that, and when you understand the idea of separating out the qualities of people, seeing the good and seeing the bad, when you actually see this experientially, directly, then it becomes very meaningful for yourself.
But that's ir jāsaprot nevis intelektuāli, bet caur tiešu praktisku pieredzi, jo, ja tas paliks tikai intelektuālā izpratnē, tas neatstās tādas nopietnas pērnas uz to, ko mēs reāli daram ikdienā. Mums ir jāspēj praktiski saskatīt to pozitīvo otrā cilvēkā, kad mūsos uzjumtās kaut kādas negatīvas emocijas, lai mēs varētu joprojām saglabāt pozitīvu skatījumu, adekvātu un konstruktīvu pieeju konkrētajai situācijai. Respektīvi, mums šīs pārdomas ir jāpadara praktiskas.
Often the problem with the Dhamma is that it often becomes too theoretical. But the whole purpose of the Dhamma, the whole purpose of Buddhism, is that it is a very practical thing. It's something which applies directly and immediately to each one of us.
Problēma ar Dhammu nevajag ir tā, ka tā paliek tikai teorētiskā līmenī, bet Dhammas mērķis ir palīdzēt mums ļoti praktiskā un tiešā veidā.
Okay, so let us move on to the next one in this gradual training. And this is here called full awareness. I'll talk about this in a second, what it actually means. But this is how it reads here.
So where exactly we are?
Where we are? Okay. You know which sutta we are? It's the one, the discourse on the simile of elephant footprint.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And have you got the paragraph numbers there?
Yeah.
So paragraph 16, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Tātad dzīvojam pēc līdzība un rinkot numur 16.
Okay, so this is how it goes. He becomes one who acts in full awareness when going forward and returning, who acts in full awareness when looking ahead and looking away, who acts in full awareness when flexing and extending his limbs, who acts in full awareness when wearing his robe and carrying his outer robe and bowl, who acts in full awareness when eating, drinking, consuming food and tasting, who acts in full awareness when defecating and urinating, who acts in full awareness when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking and keeping silent.
Tātad te runa ir par skaidru apzināšanos un teksta ir šāds. Viņš kļūst par cilvēku, kas iet uz priekšu un atgriežas skaidru saprotot savas darbības, kas raugās uz priekšu un raugās projām, skaidru saprotot savas darbības, kas izlūko un izstāja par ķermeņa locekļus, skaidru saprotot savas darbības, kas valkās tā vietā un izstāv trauku, skaidru saprotot savas darbības, kas ēd, dzer un nogaršo, skaidru saprotot savas darbības, kas nokārto dabiskās vajadzības, skaidri saprotot savas darbības, kas pastaigājas, stāv, sēž, iemieg, pamosts, runā un klusē, skaidri saprotot savas darbības.
Okay, the first thing here is that it's important to get the translation right. So the word in Pali here behind full awareness is called sampajanya, is the word in Pali here. Yeah.
Un tad vispirms jātiek skatībā ar lietotu terminoloģiju, un tad tas vārds, kas Pali valodā apzīmē to, ko mēs šeit tulkojam, kā skaidro saprašanu, ir sampajanya.
And this word sampajanya is related to the Pali word panya. Panya in Pali is the word for wisdom.
Un tas savukārt ir saistīts ar Pali valodas vārdu panya, kas nozīmē gudrība.
So what this is really about, it's about the kind of, it's a wisdom aspect to this. So calling it full awareness is actually quite misleading. What it means more like is right understanding about these things. So the translation that you see now these days is more common. This is quite an old translation. A more modern translation is actually clear comprehension.
Vārdu saknēm un izcāšanos, te vairāk runa ir par gudrības aspektu, un tādējādi runa būtu vairāk par pareizu izpratni. Konkrētais anglickais tulkojums, kas mums ir šeit, tas jau ir diezgan pavecs, un mūsdienās tas terminu kopums, kas tiek drīzāk izmantots, ir skaidra uztvere.
So what this is really about is about having a sense of understanding and a sense of clarity about all of these things.
Tātad te parādās šī skaidrības daļa un izpratnes saprašanas daļa.
So what are these things? What is the common denominator? What is it that brings, what are all these actions? Why precisely this list of actions?
Un kāpēc tiek minētas konkrēti šīs darbības?
And if you look at this list, you will see that this is a list basically of all the things that we do in daily life, all the things that are outside of, like, if you like, meditation practice.
Un ja mēs paraugāmies, kas ir šīs lietas, kas te ir minētas, un faktiski tās ir visas, kuras mēs veicam ārpus meditācijas prakses.
So this refers to how we should act in all the things in life which are not part of the meditation practice.
Tātad tas attiec uz visām lietām, kā mums būtu jārīkojas ārpus meditācijas prakses.
So the idea here is that if you are wise about how you live your ordinary life, then that will not affect your meditation practice in a bad way, but actually will support your meditation practice.
Un tātad te ideja ir tāda, ja mēs ar gudrību apzināmies, ko mēs darām katru brīdi ārpus meditācijas prakses, tad tas palīdz mūsu meditācijas praksē un otrkārt veicam un stiprinam.
This is certainly the case for monastic life. If you are a monk and nun, this is very important. But it also obviously works as well for someone who is not a monastic.
Un, protams, tas jau sevišķi darbojas mūku dzīves gadījumā, bet tāpat tas ir spēkā arī tiem, kas laicīgi cilvēki.
So the idea of clear comprehension is that you understand why you are doing something, right? You understand the purpose of the act. So, for example, if you are a monk here and you are going on alms round, you're going to get your food in the village on alms round, then you know that, okay, now I have to do this because I'm going for alms round. I'm not going into the village to, you know, look around to see all the nice entertainment, or to, you know, if you are a monk, to look at the women or whatever. This is not the purpose, right? If you do that, you're going to create problems for yourself. The purpose for going into the town is only for this purpose, to receive alms. So you are clear about the purpose why you're doing something.
Ar kādu mērķi mēs veicam konkrētās darbības, un, piemēram, ja mēs esam mūks, kas dodas uz ciematu saņemt ziedojumus, tad mūks skaidrs saprot, kāpēc viņš to dara, un viņš tam arī tam dēļ nedodas uz ciemu, lai lūkotos apkārt, raudzītos, kādas izklājas iespējas tur ir pieejams, vai raudzītos uz sievietēm. Mūks apzinās, ka viņš dodas uz ciematu, lai saņemt ziedojumus.
And this is, in a sense, so whenever you do something in life, you are, if you are, you know, very serious about the spiritual life, about developing your mind. You always can always ask this question. What is the purpose of what I'm doing? Is it a purpose? Is it a purpose that is going to support my spiritual life? Or is it a purpose? Is it something which is going to hinder my spiritual life?
Un, ja mēs nopietni pieejam savai garīgās attīstības praksei un esam apņēmušies nopietni attīstīt savu prātu, tad mums ir jāspēj saprast, vai tā konkrētā darbība, vai tā izvēle, ko mēs veiksim, vai tas palīdzēs mums attīstīt savu praksi, vai arī tā konkrētā darbība vai izvēle drīzāk kalpos kā kavēklis, kā šķērslis.
So this is what clear comprehension means. Clear comprehension is you understand the purpose of the things you are doing here, and you choose a suitable purpose, a purpose which helps you and aids you in your spiritual practice.
Un tāda ir šīs gandās sapratnes jēga, prast izvēlēties tādu mērķi, kas palīdzēs mums mūsu ceļā.
Then there is another aspect of clear comprehension, is sometimes called the aspect of suitability.
Un ir arī cits skaidrs izpratnes aspekts, un to varētu apzīmēt kā piemērlīgi.
So, for example, if you become a monk, you have to decide maybe what monastery you should live in, who should be your teacher. So you find a monastery, the purpose is to become a monk, but the suitability, some monasteries might be more suitable than others.
Un, piemēram, ja jūs esat nolēmis kļūt par mūku, tad jums ir jāizvēlas klosters un skolotājs, un piemērotība nozīmē to, ka jūsu gadījumā daži klosteri būs piemērotāki jums nekā citi.
Or you may say that meditation serves the purpose of building up the spiritual life, but certain meditation might be more suitable for your temperament than other meditations.
Un tāpat arī meditācijas palīdz mums garīgi attīstīties, bet dažas meditācijas vai to veidi ir piemērotāks mūsu konkrētam rakstura tipam.
So you do basically do what works, right? What is best, what has the best effect. There's two factors, purpose and suitability here.
Un tātad mēs izvēlamies darīt to, kas mums būs visnoderīgākais, kas mums varēs palīdzēt visvairāk, tātad skaidrā izpratne iet par gan šo pareizo mērķi, gan šo piemērotību.
So, what this means then, as it says here, you have clear comprehension when looking ahead or looking away. In other words, you look to a place for the right reason. You don't look to a place what might increase your defilements. You look in the right way.
Un par šo raudzīšanos uz priekšu vai raudzīšanos projām, tādējādi mēs raugāmies tajā virzienā, kas mūs spēs atbalstīt un mēģinam raudzīties prom no tā virziena, kurā mēs zinām, ka tas nesekmēs mūsu attīstību.
Then you have this idea of wearing your bowl and robe, the idea of eating, drinking, consuming and tasting. You eat to support your monastic life, right? You don't eat too much so that you become too drowsy. You don't eat too little so you become hungry. You eat just the right amount to support your spiritual practice.
Un tad šī savu trauku nešana, ēšana, zešana, nogaršošana. Te tas faktiski runā, ka mums ir jāsaprot, cik daudz mums ir nepieciešams, lai mēs varētu pietiekoši sevi uzturēt un attiecīgi neieslīt kādā pārmērībā.
When you wear your monastic robe, or even as a layperson, when you wear your clothes, you don't wear this because it is a fancy robe, you like kind of special, you know, special cloth perhaps, and all these kind of things. A monastic robe, the purpose of the monastic robe is just to keep you warm when it's cold, and just kind of to keep you clad in something.
Un tāpat mēs arī nevelkājam mūka drānas, tāpēc, ka tās ir modernas vai kaut kādi īpašas vai pievilcīgas. Mēs velkājam tās ar nolūku, vai tās mums pasargātu no augstuma, un lai mēs vispār būtu iekš kaut kā ietērti.
It's surprising sometimes, even in monastic life, people can be very keen on what kind of robes they're wearing and all this kind of stuff. It's surprising, but actually it can very easily happen, because it is just part of, you know, human defilements, basically.
Un tas ir pārsteidzoši, ka mūki reizēm aizraujas ar to, ka viņi vēlas tieši tā, apņēmu ne par matu citādāk. Un tas varbūt ir pārsteidzoši, bet reizē arī ne, jo tāda vienkārši ir cilvēka piesaņotā prāta nav.
So you remember the purpose of these things and you have clear comprehension about it.
Un tātad mēs atceramies šo lietu jēgu un cenšamies tās skaidri izšķirt.
Then you have towards the very end there you have the full comprehension or clear comprehension about it says here falling asleep, which actually is not quite right. It's actually sleeping. Clear comprehension about sleeping is actually the correct translation. Waking up is also not quite correct. It actually means clear comprehension about being awake. Yeah. And then talking and keeping silent. And the idea here is not that you and this is a problem with the translation full awareness. If it is full awareness, then it doesn't make any sense to have full awareness while sleeping, certainly while sleeping. Yeah. The point is not about that. The point is that you have clear comprehension about these things. You understand how much sleep you need. You sleep the right amount. Not too much, not too little. You talk the right amount. You talk when it's required. And when it's not required, you don't talk, you remain silent. So it's like having a clear understanding about the purpose of these things and then doing it to the right quantity.
Un tad uz pašām beigām mēs redzam skaidrs saprot un apzinās, kas notiek iemīgot, pamostoties, runājot un klusējot. Un jāsaka, ka tepat ir neprecīzi tas oriģinālais tulkojums drīzāk būtu jārunā nevis par ienikšanu un pamošanos, bet gan par gulēšanu, jeb miegu un būšanu nomodā, skaidrs saprotot un apzinoties. Un te faktiski ir runa par spēju saprast, cik daudz miegu mums ir nepieciešams, lai spētu izmulēties, lai spētu korekti uzturēt savas ķermeņa funkcijas, un tāpat, cik daudz mums ir nepieciešams runāt, un kad mums ir nepieciešams, un cik daudz klusēt.
So this, that is, in short, what the clear comprehension is about. And you can see how all of these things, how everything here is supportive of your spiritual practice.
Un tas tātad ir īsumā par šo skaidro saprašanu, lai varētu saprast, kas ir tas, kas atbalsta mūsu praksē.
So I want to relate this to the Noble Eightfold Path. And remember when I say that I think on the first day or the second day or whatever, I can't remember now, yesterday or the day before, I was saying how each the gradual training here, how it actually matches with the Noble Eightfold Path, right? The gradual training begins with the Buddha arising in the world, which is like right view. Then you have the going forth or wishing to practice the Dhamma, which is the right intention. Then you have the moralities, speech, body, and livelihood. And then comes after that, the sixth factor of the Eightfold Path is right effort. So these things we're looking at now comes under right effort.
Un iepriekš jau es runāju, kā šis pakāpeniskā treniņa pārskats saskana ar astoņām cēlosmeņu posmu ceļu. Un tātad tas, ka pasaulē parādās pilnīgi apskaidrot būtni, tas ir šis saskana ar šo pareizo skatījumu, pareizo redzējumu. Tālāk, ja rodas nodomas kļūt par mūku, tas ir saskaņā ar šo pareizo nolūku, un tālāk ir tās lietas, kas attiecas uz tiku minimu, pareiza runa, pareiza iztikas pelnīšana, un šī te daļa, par ko mēs runājam tagad, saistās ar pareizām pūvēm.
Okay, so and one other thing I should probably say as well, this when you read this, it feels like it relates to monks, right? I mean, the whole thing about carrying the ball and all these kinds of things, or to nuns perhaps. But this can also relate to lay people. Even though it is phrased in monastic terms, it still has a relevance to lay Buddhists as well.
Un vēl arī pēc lietotiem vārdiem es varētu padomāt, ka tas attiecas uz mūķiem vai mūķinēm, tas parādās, es iedomu trauks un tam līdzīgas lietas. Bet tas attiecas arī uz laicīgiem cilvēkiem.
And all it really does, it just tells you that, you know, how you spend your time, how you spend your life, it actually affects you. And because it affects you, you are wise about how what you do in your life, how you spend your time, what friends you have, etc., etc.
Un faktiski tas, kas šeit tiek teikt, Tas, kā mēs pavadām savu laiku, mūs ietekmē, un tāpēc ir svarīgi saprast, kā mēs pavadām savu laiku, kā mēs izvēlamies savus draugus, un kāda ietekme tas uz mums atstāja.
Okay, so that, this is then right effort, and then now we are slowly moving over to right mindfulness. Right mindfulness is what is coming next here.
Un tad tas attiecās uz šo pareizo piepūlu, un tad mēs sekos daļa, kas tālajā tūpos un ceļā dos pareizā apzinātībā.
So this is how it goes. This is what it says here. So possessing this aggregate of noble virtue and this noble restraint of the faculties and possessing this noble mindfulness and full awareness, he resorts to a secluded resting place, the forest, the root of a tree, a mountain, a ravine, a hillside cave, a charnel ground, a jungle thicket, an open space, a heap of straw.
Apveltīts ar šo cēlo tikmību kopumu, ar šo cēlo stāvāldīšanu, ar šo cēlo apzinātību un skaidru saprašanu, viņš dodas uz atālu vietu, mežu, kuru, cakni, kalnu, grāvu, kalnu alu, kapsētu, džungļu biezokni, plašu klājumu, salmu kalni.
It's nice, isn't it, how it's called, everything is called noble, isn't that quite, it's quite beautiful here.
Un tas ir jauki, ka visur sākumā parādās šis cēluma epitets.
And the reason why it's, one reason why it's called noble is because it makes you noble if you practice in this way.
Un viens no iemesliem, kāpēc es tiek saukts par cēlu, ir, ka tas mums padara par šī darbības ir cēls un padara mūsu attiecības.
And the interesting thing here is that only at this point it says here that you resort to a secluded resting place. So resorting to a secluded resting place means that you find yourself a place which is secluded, apart from other people, apart from society. And this, of course, is indication that this is where meditation begins.
Un tikai šajā vietā tātad mēs redzam, ka parādās došanās provus kādu attālu vietu. Un tas nozīmē, ka šeit sākas meditācijas dziļākā daļa.
This is like real meditation, right? This is kind of the, this is the, this is where your meditation actually really becomes strong and actually really works.
Un tā ir tā vieta, kur meditācijas sāk patiešām kļūt spēcīgi un patiešām sāk darboties ļoti dziļi.
And that's why it says you're supposed to go to a secluded place. In other words, you're supposed to be by yourself. Unless you are very firm, unless you are very established, unless your mind is very strong. Sometimes going to be by yourself can be very difficult, right? You have to be very strong inside of yourself to be able to go, to stay by yourself.
Un tāpēc tiek runāts par došanos uz kādu atālu vietu, un tas nozīmē, ka mums ir arī jābūt iekšēji tik stipri, lai mēs varētu būt vienatnē paši ar sevi.
And it's not just about being able to stay by yourself, it's actually being able to enjoy staying by yourself.
Un tas nozīmē, ka mums ne tikai jāspēj būt vieniem, bet arī jāspēj izbaudīt šī vienatne ar sevi.
So this is where meditation begins. So let's have a look at the next phrase here. On returning from his arms round, after his meal, he sits down, folds his legs crosswise, sets his body erect, and establishes mindfulness before him.
Un tad to, ko es necināju tālāk, atgriezies no ziedojuma saņemšanas pēc savas sēdienreizes, viņš apsēžas, sakarstos kājas, trot savu ķermeni taisnu, apzināts.
This phrase here is quite an important phrase, and when you see this phrase, you know, I know straight away, because I know I've read this sutta so many times, that this is exactly the same phrase you find at the beginning of the discourse of mindfulness of breathing here.
Un šī ir tieši tā frāze, kas parādās aprakstā par elpošanas apzināšanos, un tā kā es esmu pietiekoši daudz reizes šīs stundas lasījis, es uzreiz atpazīstu šo konkrēto frāzi.
And it's also similar to some of the things you find when the Satipatthana, the right mindfulness, is talked about in the suttas.
Un tas ir ļoti līdzīgs arī tam, kā iesākas Satipatāna apraksts tās.
So you know that when you see, we know straight away that what we're talking about now is meditation practice.
Un tādēļ mēs uzreiz skaidrojam saprast, ka te ir runa par meditācijas praksi.
And what of course is very important here is this whole idea that all of these other things, they have to, ideally, you have done all of these other things before you actually start your meditation practice.
Un tas nozīmē to, ka ideālā gadījumā mums jau ir jābūt paveikušiem visi tās iepriekšējās lietas un darbības, par kurām ir runāts iepriekšējos posmos.
The reason for that is because if you do all these other things, then when you come to meditation, you have a natural mindfulness. Your mindfulness is, you are in the present moment, you have a sense of clarity about the present moment, and because you have that natural mindfulness there, meditation is quite easy, quite straightforward.
Un tas iemesls, kāpēc mēs vēlamies, lai visu šā iepriekšējā darbības, visu iepriekšējā posmu jau būtu paveikti, ir, ka tādā gadījumā mūsos jau pastāv dabiska apzināšanās un līdz ko mēs apsveicamies, lai meditētu, tā norit pat par sevi dabīgu un nepiespiest.
So the most important part of meditation practice is not so much what you do in the meditation itself. The most important part is actually all the other stuff that you do outside of meditation.
Un faktiski tas nozīmē, ka meditācijas praksē pats svarīgākais ir nevis tas, ko mēs darām meditācijas laikā, bet gan viss tas, ko mēs darām ārpus meditācijas prakses.
And that's why I have taken so much time to focus on all these other things, because this is actually where you make meditation possible.
Un tāpēc es esmu tik daudz laika veltījis visām šīm pārējām lietām, kas ir kā tieši neskar meditāciju, jo tieši šīs visas pārējās lietas ir tās, kas padara meditāciju iespējama.
Okay, so let's have a quick look at what he says here. So it says, folding his legs crosswise, right? Which basically means sitting cross-legged. So sometimes when people see that, they say the only way you can meditate is by sitting with your legs cross-legged.
Un te mēs redzam frāzi, ka viņš apsēžas sakarpojas kājas, un tad cilvēki, ko redz, viņi domā, ka tas ir vienīgais veids, kā drīkst vai ir iespējams meditēt.
But I don't think that's actually what it means. I think what this means is basically that at the time of the Buddha, people were used to sitting on the ground. This was like a natural posture for them. And because it was a natural posture for them, that was actually what was comfortable for people in those days.
Es būšu tā nedomāju. Es domāju, ka tajā laikā, kad Buddha mācīja, cilvēki bija pieraduši sēdēt uz zemes, un tādējādi tas viņiem bija dabīgi, tas viņiem bija ērti.
So if you are comfortable sitting cross-legged, that's great. But the main purpose here is actually being comfortable, being at ease, being relaxed. That is the main purpose behind this.
Un ja jums ir ērts sēdēt ar sakrustotām kājām, tad viss ir kārtībā, bet te galvenais ir, lai mēs justos ērti, lai mums nebūtu kaut kādas neērtības.
It has also here, it says that you sit down. So what this means is that if you're going to do real meditation practice, the real deep meditation, it happens while you sit. That's what it means.
Un apsēšanās tie ir minēti tamdēļ, ka dziļākie meditācijas stāvokļi tiek sasniegti nekustībā, un tas nozīmē, ka nepieciešams apsēsties.
Then it says that you set your body erect. Now, the reason for that, of course, that if your body is straight, there's usually more clarity in the mind, right? But you can't really force that clarity here. So you have to be careful. You have to know that, again, the right time for setting the body erect. If you do it too early on, if you try to be straight away, you will feel tense. You will feel it won't be natural. But if it is the right time, if mindfulness is good, then that straightness of the body will be very natural and easy for you.
Un te runāts arī, ka jātur savus ķermenis taisnā stāvoklī, un tas ir nepieciešams tāpēc, ka taisnas ķermenis stāvoklis rada lielāku skaidrību, bet atkal ir nepieciešams, lai tas būtu nabīgi un nepiespiest, jo mēs, jo ja mēs sākam jo sākumā sevi piespiest uzreiz nebūt taisnu ķermeni, tas mūsos rada vairāk saspringumu, tāpēc ir nepieciešams, lai šī skaidrība un ķermeņa vertikālā pozīcija nāktu labīgi.
So what this means is that when you start meditation, for example, if you want to start off by leaning against the back of the chair or leaning against the wall, that's perfectly okay. And then as your mindfulness improves, there comes a point when sitting straight becomes natural.
Un tādējādi, ja mēs vēlamies sākt meditēt vispār kārtībā, ja mēs vēlamies atbalstīt savu muguru pret sienu vai krēstu nodzvelti, un kad mēs būsim guvuši lielāko apzinātību, lielāko atbrīvošanos, tad jau ķermenim būs tendence pašam iztaisnoties un tiepties pie šī vertikālā stāvokļa.
Even someone like my teacher Ajahn Brahm, who is a very, very skilled meditator, he's one of those very, very gives very profound meditation practice. He often says that when he starts off his meditation, maybe because he's tired, he's been working hard at a long day, very often he starts by leaning back against the wall.
Un mans skolotājs, kas ir visnotaļ ļoti dziļa meditāciju praktizētājs, viņš stāst, ka reizēm viņš sāk meditēt, un tā kā viņš jūtas nuguris, viņš vispirms atbalsta savu muguru, viņš atlaižās.
So there's no shame in leaning against the wall.
Un tādējādi, tur nav nekā nosodāt, ka mēs sākam atbalstāmies, lai pēc tam mūsu meditācijas praksa varētu kļūt dziļākam labāk.
So basically, you have to remember, you have to be wise about these things. This is what it comes down to. Be wise. See what you need, what works. This is what is important. Don't force yourself into things that are unnatural, that are uncomfortable. There's no magic in having a particular posture. The magic is in allowing the body to disappear because it's no longer important.
Un tādējādi mums ir jāizmanto gudrība, lai saprastu, kas mums ir nepieciešams, kas mums ir pareizākais. Ķermeņa pozā nav nekāda maģija, tur nav nekādu brīvumu. Tas svarīgākais ir spēt saprast, kā mums ir nepieciešams rīkoties, lai tas nestu labākos rezultātus.
And then the last thing it says here, it says that you establish mindfulness before you.
Un tad visbeidzot šajā teikumā tiek runāts par apzināšanos radīšanu.
And the way you do that is, first of all, the most important way of establishing mindfulness is all the things we have talked about before. This is how mindfulness becomes established when you sit down to meditate.
Un apzināšanās radīšanā mēs izmantojam visu tās pašas lietas, par kurām mēs esam jau runājuši iepriekš.
So it is a long course, right? Establishing a mindfulness is not something you can do just by sitting down. It's something that happens gradually over a long period of time.
Un tādējā neapzinātība nav kaut kas, pie kā mēs varam nonākt uzreiz, tāpat vienkārši apsēžoties, pie tās parasti nonāk ilgākā pakāpeniskā laika posmā.
And what you can do when you go to meditate, or you go on a meditation retreat or whatever, is that then you have to kind of rely on all the work that you have done throughout the months, throughout the years, to help you with that mindfulness.
Un kad mēs dodamies uz retrītiem, mēs faktiski paļaujamies uz visu to, ko mēs esam darījuši mēnešu un gadu garumā, pirms mēs esam devušies uz retrītu.
So often it's a matter of waiting, right? You wait till your mind calms down, you wait for your mind to regain its energy, and then you allow all the effort you put in the past to kind of build up inside of you and come to the fore.
Un tādējā tas, ko mēs darām, retrīta laikā mēs pirms mēs ļaujam savu norimt, mēs ļaujam, lai parāda, mēs atgūstam nepieciešamo enerģiju, un tad mēs ļaujam, lai viss tas, ko mēs esam darījuši iepriekšējo mēnešu un gadu laikā, lai tas mūsos iekšēji sāk nest savus augus un rezultātus.
Okay, so that is kind of the introduction. So now what we're talking about now is meditation practice. So ideally what we should be looking at now is something like the Anapanasati Sutta, which is maybe the most famous sutta about mindfulness of breathing.
Un tad mēs runākam jau pie pašas meditācijas prakses, un ideālā gadījumā mēs raudzītos uz kaut ko tādu kā Anapanasati Sutta, kas aprakstā elpošanas apzinātību.
And it's very useful to know that this is about meditation practice, because it's not so clear from the text here that this is what it means.
Un tāpēc ir svarīgi saprast, ka mēs šeit runājam par meditācijas apzinātības praksi, un no paša teksta varbūt tas negluži skaidri nolasās.
So this is what it says. It says here, abandoning covetousness for the world, he abides with a mind free of covetousness. He purifies his mind from covetousness. Abandoning ill will and hatred, he abides with a mind free from ill will, compassionate for the welfare of all living beings. He purifies his mind from ill will and hatred. Abandoning sloth and torpor, he abides free from sloth and torpor, recipient of light, mindful and fully aware, or mindful and clearly comprehending. He purifies his mind from sloth and torpor. Abandoning restlessness and remorse, he abides unagitated, with a mind inwardly peaceful. He purifies his mind from restlessness and remorse. Abandoning doubt, he abides, having gone beyond doubt, unperplexed about wholesome states. He purifies his mind from doubt.
Atmetot vēl pēc pasaules, viņš paliek ar prātu, kas ir dzīves no vēlmēm. Viņš attīra savu prātu no vēlmēm. Atmetot nelabvēlību un mājumu, viņš paliek ar tādu, kas ir dzīves no nelabvēlības un mājumu. Līdzotīgi vēlot visām dzīvām būtnēm atklājumu, viņš attīra savu prātu no nelabvēlības un mājumu. Atmetot gausumu un apātīju, viņš paliek ar prātu, kas ir dzīves no gausumu un apātīs. Gaismu uztaroši izzinās, un ar skaidru saprašanu viņš atmier savu prātu no gausuma un apātīs. Atmetot nemieru un nožēlu, viņš paliek ar prātu, kas ir nesatraucis un iekšēji mierīgs. Viņš atmier savu prātu no nemieru un nožēlas. Atmetot šaubas, viņš paliek ar prātu, kas ir pārvarējis šaubas. Bez apjukuma par to, kas ir tas viņa prāta stāvokļi, viņš atmier savu prātu no šaubām.
So this is then the, you can probably recognize this as the five hindrances, the five nivaranas.
Un tad mēs drukam varam atpazīt, ka ir runa par pieciem šķēršļiem, pieciem nivaranām.
And in one way it's surprising, right? Because we have been already purifying, first through conduct and speech, then through the sense restraint. And although we have been purifying all this time, and suddenly now it talks about the five hindrances.
Un mūs ir pārsteigt, ka mēs šajā brīdī runājam par attīrīšanos, jo mēs jau iepriekš esam runājuši par atturēšanos no ķermeņa un runas negatīvajām darbībām un arī no negatīvajām domām.
So why is that?
Un kāpēc atkal šeit parādās attīrīšanos?
And the reason is because at this point you are getting very close, you started the meditation practice. The hindrances, the defilements of the mind are already very low, but there still is a little bit of defilements left. So what this means, when we talk about the five hindrances, what we are referring to is a very weak aspect of the five, of the defilements.
Un tas nozīmē, ka mēs esam attīrījušies jau diezgan lielā mērā, un šobrīd meditācijai sākoties mūsos ir palikuši vēl relatīvi nelieli šķēršļi, un tādējādi šie pieci šķēršļi ir tikai tā kā neliela traucēta salīdzinājumā ar visu pārējo.
And it is only this very weak aspect of the hindrances that you can purify through meditation practice.
Un tādējādi mēs ar meditācijas praksi varam attīrīt tikai šos te vājos šķēršļus.
And this is why you see that we are talking about two things at the same time. We're talking about meditation practice, which is very clear from the first sentence, you sit down, put your legs cross-legged, etc. It's about meditation. And at the same time, it's also about abandoning the hindrances. So this is where these things come together.
Un tad mēs skaidri varam redzēt, ka mēs šeit runājam par meditāciju, ko sievēm, un vienlaikus mēs šeit strādājam ar atbrīvošanos no šķēršļiem. Šīs divas lietas, meditācija un atbrīvošanās no šķēršļiem, iet kopā.
But this abandoning of defilements through meditation, it only works if the defilements are already very, very weak.
Un šī atbrīvošanās no šķēršļiem, no piesārņojumiem savu meditāciju darbojas tad, ja šie šķēršļi un piesārņojumi jau ir visnotaļ niecīgi un vāji.
So it's quite, you know, imagine that you meditate. Now if your defilements are already quite weak, what it means is that if you If you then watch the breath, it's quite easy to watch the breath. It's the defilement, it's the desires, the problems in the mind. But this is what takes the mind away from the breath. So the defilements are very weak. It is quite easy and natural to focus on the breath.
Un tādēļ, kad mēs apsveikamies, lai meditētu, mums jau ir jāmuļ šai dabīgai elpas apzināšanai, jo, ja mums būs iepriekšēji šķēršļi, ar kuriem mēs neesam tikuši galā iepriekš, tā rupjāki šķēršļi kā vēlums un tā tālāk, tiem būs tendence mūsu prātu novirzīt, bet ja mēs esam ar tiem tikuši pietiekoši lielā mērā galā, tad mums prāts nabīgi viegli apzināsies elpu.
And because you are focusing on the breath, it means you're not allowing the mind to go to certain objects that you desire. You're not allowing the mind to go to objects you don't like that might create anger. So because you're not allowing your mind to go to these things, it means that all of these desires and angers, gradually they diminish and become less and less.
Un, ja mēs meditējam par elpu, tad vienmēr mēs arī neļaujam mūsu prātam doties pie patīkamiem objektiem, pie objektiem, kurus mēs iekārojam, vai pie objektiem, kas mums nepatīk un rada dusmas. Un tādējādi mēs jau esam pietiekoši attīrījušies, lai elpa varētu viegli pati atrasties uzmanības centrā.
So by focusing on the breath, it's like you're taking away the fuel for the defilements.
Un tādējādi, tajā brīdī, kad mēs fokusējamies uz elpu, mēs nedodam degvielu šiem mūsu piesārņojumiem.
And what we really should be doing now, we should really have a look at the Anapanasati Sutta, because the Anapanasati Sutta shows you what happens when you're watching the breath, how gradually, stage by stage, you become more and more peaceful, more and more aware, more and more calm.
Un tas, ko mums vajadzētu darīt, ir aplūkot Anapanasati Sutta, jo tajā tiek aprakstīts posmu pa posmam, kā mēs pakāpeniski kļūstam arvien mierīgāk un nokļūstam dziļākos līmeņos.
But there's no time for that, unfortunately, so we're just going to have to continue with this.
Bet vienkārši tā mums nepietiek laika, tā kā mēs turpināsim vien ar to, kas mums ir šeit.
So you use the Anapanasati, you use the Satipatthana practice, whatever it is, to then gradually overcome the defilements until the mind is completely pure.
Un tātad mēs izmantojam Anapanasati un Satipatthanas šīs sutras un praksas, lai pakāpeniski padarītu arvien tīrāku un mierīgāku.
So remember when we're talking about the first day, we're talking about the purification of the mind, right? How purification happens stage by stage. So this is now you're reaching the culmination point. You've been purifying, getting more and more pure. And now finally, for the first time, you find that full sense of purity inside.
Un, kā mēs jau runājam no paša sākuma par šo attīrīšanos, mēs esam attīrīšies, un tagad esam sasnieguši to virsotnes daļu, kurā mēs esam jau ļoti tūl pašam rezultātam.
This is where the goal is starting to come out, right?
Tas ir tas brīdis, kad tūlīt mēs būsim nonākuši pie mērķa.
You're seeing the gold for the first time. You're seeing something beautiful, something shining, something powerful.
Kad mēs beidzot būsim tikuši pie šī tīrā, attīrītā zelta, kas ir spīdoši un mirdzoši.
Now, the next thing now, we have gone through the right mindfulness, which is Satipatthana, just have been looking at now. And one nice way of translating right mindfulness is simply as a meditation practice. This is kind of the meditation that leads up to the deep stages of samadhi. So again, remember, we're talking about the Noble Eightfold Path. So after mindfulness, then comes right samadhi, samma samadhi, which is the next thing on this gradual training here.
Un tātad pie šī pareizās apzinātības mēs varam nonākt pie pareizas koncentrēšanās un pareizā samādī.
So, this is what happens then. And it says, as it says here, having thus abandoned these five hindrances, imperfections of the mind that weaken wisdom, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, he enters upon and abides in the first jhana, which is accompanied by applied and sustained thought, with rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. This Brahmin is called a footprint of the Tathagata, something scraped by the Tathagata, something marked by the Tathagata. But a noble disciple does not yet come to the conclusion. The Blessed One is fully enlightened. The Dhamma is well proclaimed by the Blessed One. The Sangha is practicing the good way.
Tātad tādā veidā atmet šos piecus čēršus, prāta defektus, kas vāja un gudrība, attālināts no piecu maņu baudām, attālināts no nedarīgiem prāta stāvokļiem, viņš iet un uztvers pirmajā džānā, kur sastāv no sajūsmas un patikas, kas dzimušas no attālinātības un pavadītas ar domu un apskatu. Šo bramīnu sauc par tatagātas pēdas nospiedumu, kaut ko, ko tatagāt izkrāpējis, kaut ko, ko tatagāt iezīmējis. Bet cēlais māteklis vēl nenāk pie slēdzina. Svētītājs ir pilnībā apgaismots. Svētītājs ir labi izklāstījis dāmu, sanga, labi praktizē.
Okay, so you can see here that this, now we're talking about the real samadhi, right? The real deep states of meditation and all of this work that you have to do to get here. But of course it's worth it, right? If you discover something beautiful, something profound, and not only do you discover something very beautiful, but the whole path is very beautiful. As you practice this path, every stage of the way, you feel more light, you feel more happy, you feel more at ease, you feel more independent, you feel more relaxed. Everything comes with this path. Every stage is beautiful, but now you get into things which are really incredibly powerful and incredibly beautiful.
Un tagad mēs redzam, ka esam nonākuši pie prakses jau pašas dziļākās daļas pie samadhi prasēm. Un tādējādi jaņem vairāk arī ne tikai šī rezultāta daļa ir skaista un dziļa un patīkama, bet arī visa prakses daļa, kas novena līdz šim stāvoklim, ir skaista, jo tā pakāpeniski padara mūs arvien laimīgākus, arvien neatkarīgākus, brīvākus un vieglākus.
And just to have a quick look at what how this jhana is explained, the first thing it says here that the hindrances are imperfections of the mind that weaken wisdom.
Un tātad, kā tiek aprakstīta šis jhānas stāvoklis, tātad cilvēks ir brīvs no tikrās stāvokļiem, kas mazina vai vājina gudrību.
So what that means is that the only way, if you want to be wise, the only way is that you have to abandon these hindrances.
Un tātad, ja mēs vēlamies nonākt līdz pilnīgai gudrībai, mums ir jāatbrīvos no šiem čēršļiem.
And this is one reason why what we're seeing now, the Samma Samadhi, these jhanas, why they are so important. They are so important because once you get to these states, then the hindrances, you are far away from the hindrances, and that's when wisdom becomes possible.
Un tādējādi, kad mēs esam pie šī samādhi stāvokļa, pie šīm džānām, mēs, ja mēs esam brīvi no šiem šķērsiem, tad tas padara iespēju notikt šim procesam.
Okay, so what then is this jhana? The first thing it says here, it says, quite secluded from sensual pleasures.
Un tātad, kā tiek aprakstīt šī džāna, tā tiek aprakstīt, kā diezgan attālināt no piecu maņu baudām.
Now, I think a better translation of that is secluded from the five senses.
Tātad, precīzi to, ko jums varētu būt nošķirtība no piecām maņām vai tomirtiem.
The Pali word behind this is the word kāma. And the word karma has two different meanings. It can either mean the desire regarding the five senses, and that is how it is used in the singular, but in the plural it actually refers to the five senses themselves.
Un tas vārds, kas originālā parādās Pāli valodā ir karma, un tas var norādīt uz vēlmēm, vai tas tiek lietots daudzskaitlī, tad uz piecām maņām.
And here we find the word used in the plural, so I think the right translation here is actually secluded from the five senses.
Un tātad, tā kā tiek lietots daudzskaidrs, tad drīzāk pareizāks varētu būt nošķirtība no piecām maņām.
So this is one of the markers of a deep state of samadhi. One of the markers, one of the ways that you know that this is happening is that the the whole world that relates to the five senses disappears. You're going completely inside the mind.
Un tā ir viena no pazīmēm, ka mēs esam nokļuvuši pie šī dziļā prāta stāvokļa, jo, kad mēs tajā esam, tad izzūd faktiski pasaule ar tā pasaule, ko mēs uztveram caur savām piecām maņām.
You will notice that in meditation practice, you will notice how as you meditate, when you become more peaceful, it's as if the world moves away, right? You're going into yourself. It's as if the world becomes further away.
Un mēs, ja nokļūstam meditācijas dziļākajos stāvokļos, mēs varam pamanīt to sajūtu, ka pasaulē faktiski attālinās.
And you notice how beautiful that is, how peaceful that is.
Un mēs varam pamanīt to, ka cik laba sajūta tajā brīdī.
And that process of the world kind of disappearing, of the world fading away, yeah, that process culminates in the point when the world disappears completely. Yeah.
Un šī pakāpeniskā sajūta, ka pasaule attālinās un izgaist, rezultējas pilnīgā pasaules izgaišanās.
So that is one of the ways you can know that you have achieved a very deep state of samādhi. Yeah.
Un tā ir viena no tām pazīmēm, pēc kuras mēs varam secināt, ka mēs esam sasnieguši dzīves samādhi.
Then you have the second one here, secluded from unwholesome states. Unwholesome states here basically refers back to the five hindrances we saw before. So when the mind is in jhana, it is a perfectly pure state of mind.
Un tālāk te ir runāts par nošķirtību no nedarīgiem prāta stāvokļiem. Tie faktiski, šie nedarīgi prāta stāvokļi ir tie pieci šķēršļi, par kuriem mēs tikko runājām.
And then you enter upon and abide in the first jhana, which is accompanied by applied and sustained thought. Now, applied and sustained thought is means like a tiny movement of the mind. It's like the mind is still moving a little bit. It's not perfectly steady. Yeah.
Šī džāna, kas sastāv no sajūsmas un patriciskas dzimušas no tālnātības un pavadītas ar domu un apskatu, tas aprakstā to, kādā stāvoklī ir šis doma process.
And it has rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. In other words, the jhana state is basically a state of pure happiness. And that's what is meant by this last phrase here.
Tātad sajūsma un patrika ir tas, kas dabīgi parādās jhānas laikā.
And then comes a very powerful statement. It says, this Brahmana is called the footprint of the Tathagata. In other words, a footprint of the Buddha. Something scraped by the Buddha. Something marked by the Buddha.
Un tad parādās, visnotaļ, dīšanas skanošais šo Brahmana sauc par Tathagata Buddhas tēmas nospiedumu, kaut ko, ko Tathagata izkāpējis, kaut ko, ko Tathagata iezīmējis.
Remember how the sutta started off? The sutta started off by, if you're going to look for an elephant in the forest, you see a big footprint, right? And then you see something scraped on the tree. And on the basis of that, you think, maybe this is a big elephant. You're not 100% sure yet, but you're seeing the marks of a big elephant. It is possible that this is a big elephant.
Un te mēs varam atcerēties par to, ka sutta šādā veidā sākās par to, ka mēs redzam kaut kādas izkāpējumus, kaut kādas pazīmes, ka te varētu būt bijis liels divens zivonis.
And this is the power of these states. When you come to these states, they are so profound that when you come to a deep state of samadhi, and you know that you are, it's almost like you are in the presence of the Buddha.
Un tā ir tā sajūta, kas parādās šīs dziļajos stāvokļos, tā sajūta ir tik īpaša, ka mēs sajūtamies gluži vai kā Buddhas klātbūtnē.
You cannot yet be 100% sure, but you know that this jhana, this is a mark of the Buddha. If the Buddha was there, this is the kind of thing the Buddha would be doing. Yeah.
Un mēs varam sajust, ka tas ir kaut kas tāds, ko, ja Buddha būtu bijis šeit, tas ir tas, ko viņš darītu, tā sajūta ir līdzīga, kā viņam klātesot.
It's a very powerful simile, it's very kind of, very strong. And one of the things that you find in the suttas, in the word of the Buddha, you always find this, you always find the jhanas, and then you find the stages of awakening, the stages of deep understanding and realization. These are always together, it's like they form one unit, because these are like the profoundest aspects of the Buddha's teaching. Yeah.
Un tas ir tas, ko mēs varam redzēt sutās, ka te parādās kopā gan šīs ģēles, gan dziļies stāvokļi un arī apskaidrības pieredze un apraksts.
So, this one of the interesting things here as well, because now we are at the stage of Samma Samadhi, of deep meditation. And one of the interesting things about the Buddha's teaching is that the Eightfold Path actually stops at that particular point.
Un te mēs esam nonākuši pie Samma Samadhi, pie dziļākās meditācijas apraksta. Un interesanti, ka šo vietu arī noslēdz tālais astoņu posmu ceļš, lai tajā vietā tas apstājas.
And the reason why it stops there is because now you have done the practice, and the result of doing that practice is awakening, is understanding. That is a natural result of this practice.
Un tas iemesls, kāpēc tas šajā vietā apstājas, ir tas, ka visu šo procesu, šī pakāpenisko posmu treniņa rezultātā, mēs nonākam pie prakses rezultātu.
So if you start off with the right view, remember right view at the beginning, the Buddha arising in the world. If you start off with that, and you practice this whole thing, and you get to the deep samadhi, then the result of that is awakening.
Un tātad, ja mēs sākam ar šo pareizo redzējumu, kas faktiski iesāks ar Buddhas parādīšanos pasaulē, un ja mēs izejam visu ceļu līdz pat šiem dziļākajiem stāvokļiem, tad mēs visbeidzot varam nonākt pie apskaitījums.
I don't, there's no more time to actually read the rest of the sutta, but the rest of the sutta, then first of all, it goes through the other jhanas. You have the first jhana, then you have the second, third and fourth jhana. And after that, then comes the awakening experience itself.
Un tad nav vairs laika, lai izlasītu sutru pavisam līdz beigām, bet tālāk faktiski tiek aprakstīta otrā jhana, trešā jhana un ceturtā jhana, un tas noslēdzas ar apskaidrību.
And then, when you reach the awakening, that is when you know that now, with the jhanas, you can see the footprint, but you haven't actually seen the Buddha yet, right? But when you get to the awakening experience, that's when you're like seeing the elephant sitting at the foot of a tree. It's like you see the Buddha for the first time.
Un visi šīs četri jhanas ir tikai kā pazīmes, ko ir atstājis šis lielais zilonis, un kad mēs to rezultātā tiekam pie apskaidrības, tā mēs izbeidot ieraugam šo ziloni, ieraugam to, ko redzēja Buddha.
So, there you are, that is the gradual training. very nice, very profound, very beautiful. In my opinion, I love this kind of discourse. And it has all so much to it, there's so much information in there. You know, you could use that discourse and you could talk about that discourse for 2 or 3 weeks if you wanted to, by taking in suttas from elsewhere and bringing it in. Because this is really the full path of practice found in one individual sutta.
Un tad šī sutra man pašam liekas ļoti skaista un dziļa, un par to varētu runāt vairāku nedēļu garumā, klāt iesaistot citas sutras un parādot, kā tas viss process izskatās pilnā plašā apjomā, un tas, ka mēs gūstam šo plašo pārskatu, ir ļoti vērtīgi.
So I just want to say just a couple of minutes at the very end, just a few last words, just to maybe summarize things a little bit.
Un tad visbeidot es vēlētos nosteikt ar šiem vārdiem, kas apkopo to, ko mēs esam pārkopojuši.
So hopefully you now have some idea of what the Buddhist path is about, not only some idea, but you have hopefully quite a bit of information.
Cerams, ka jums vairs ir ne tikai kaut kādas drusciņas priekšstata par to, kā ir budismu praksa, bet cerams jau plašāks ieskats un izpratni.
So now it's just a matter of applying this and actually doing these things.
Un tagad vienkārši ir nepieciešams šīs lietas ievēt praksē.
Now one of the most important things in applying yourself is to remember to inspire yourself on the Buddhist path.
Bet viena lieta, kas ir nepieciešama, ja mēs vēlamies tās ielikt praksē, ir atcerēties, ka mums ir nepieciešams saglabāt iedvesmi.
Without that inspiration, without the reminder, and you need the reminder quite regularly, without that, it's very hard to sustain the practice.
un bez iedvesmas un regulārā atgādinājuma mums ir pagrūti saglabāt regulāru praksi.
So get a book which you can read, like the suttas, for example, the book I was recommending the other day in the words of the Buddha. Get something like that. Listen to a talk at a regular interval when you need inspiration. And this way, by getting kind of input at a regular intervals, you will be able to sustain yourself, inspire yourself and keep the practice going.
Un tad atrodat kādu grāmatu, kas jūs pie kuras jūs varat regulāri atgriezties un kas jūs iedvesmo, piemēram, kā grāmatu, ko es minēju vakar, vai arī jūs varat atrast kādus audio vai video ierakstus no mācībām, kuros jūs smēties iedvesmu un tādējādi regulāri stiprināt un atbalstīt šo savu iedvesmu, kas palīdz jums turpināt.
And then the way that you know that you're making progress, the way you know that is that every year, if you are keen on meditation practice, do try to do a meditation retreat every year.
Un ja jūs meditācijas praksi turpin iedvesmot un jūs to regulāri veicat, cenšaties katru gadu veikt vismaz vienu retrītu.
And then you look at your mind from year to year. You see what happens. What was it like last year? What is it this year? And if you can see that from year to year, you can see that something is happening inside of you. Your mind is becoming more clear. Your mind is becoming more peaceful. You feel more gentle, more soft, more kind-hearted inside. You have more compassion. You have more peace. If you see this is happening, and at the same time, you can see all the negative things, the irritation, the desires, the confusion, all that is going down. If you see this changing like this from year to year, you know you're doing the right thing here.
Un tad, ja mēs spējam salīdzinot to pieredzi, kas mums ir bijusi vienā gadā ar pieredzi šajā gadā un tā tālāk, tad, un ja mēs pamanām, ka mēs esam kļuvuši mierīgāki, skaidrāki, uztaroši, laipnāki, mīlošāki, ja, un vienlaiks mūsos ir mazinājušās negatīvās lietas, kā dusmas un tamlīdzīgi. Ja mēs redzam, ka mūsos notiek pozitīvas pārmaiņas, tas palīdz mums saprast, ka mēs dodamies pareizā virzienā.
But if you're not making progress, if you're feeling more angry, more confused, et cetera, sometimes this happens, right? Sometimes it seems to go in the wrong way. And that also is just a sign. Then you need to ask yourself, why is this? Why am I not making progress? And by looking at that, then you have to change, you have to reflect. This is such an important part of the Buddhist practice, actually to reflect on what you're doing. Is it working? Is it not working? And then guide yourself based on that.
Un tāpat varam gadīties, ka mēs pamanām, ka mūsos nenotiek izmaiņas pareizajā virzienā, ka mēs esam kļuvuši neiecietīgāki, dusmīgāki, mūs māc lielāka neskaidrība, un tad ir nepieciešams pārdomāt, ko mēs esam darījuši nepareizi, kurā mums vajag pamainīt, lai mēs sāktu virzīties atkal pozitīvākā virzienā.
And when you do this, it becomes very powerful and very beautiful, because then you feel like you have a life becomes very purposeful, right? There's a very powerful meaning to life there, because you're doing something which actually is changing you. You actually feel that you're doing something really worthwhile in life. And this is one of the powerful things about this. It gives you a very clear sense of direction, a very clear sense of purpose.
Un tāpēc šis pārdomāšanas process arī ir ļoti svarīgs. Un ja mēs redzam, ka mēs esam ka mēs virzāmies pareizā virzienā, tas dod mums lielu iedvesmu, tas dod mums spēku, lai turpinātu.
Okay, so that's all I want to say. Yes, sir.
I have one question about Sutta.
Okay, yeah.
Some of the teachers that have visited us here have directly said that they don't practice jhana meditation.
So I
wonder if there can be different interpretations, or can you comment?
Well, this is the nice thing about reading the sutta, because if you read the sutta, you can find out for yourself whether you should practice jhana or not. And if you read the sutta, you know, every other sutta basically has the jhana in it. So this is a great thing about going back to the word of the Buddha. You can actually know for yourself. You don't have to rely on this teacher or that teacher. You can find that for yourself. So I would recommend that. It sets you more free in a sense, which is a good thing about it.
Mums pārdomāt par kas ar jautājumu.
Mums jautājums bija par džānām, jo dažnos kolēgām, kas mums ir mācījuši, ir teikuši, ka viņi nepraktizēja džānu meditācijas jautājumu, vai ir iespējami dažādas interpretācijas par Budas mācību, un vai skolotājs var kaut kā šo komentēt?
Jā. Skolotājiem bija tā, ka tie ir tā jaukā lieta, ka mēs varam paņemt tieši to, ko ar teicis Budu, mēs redzam, ka faktiski Dievs gan bieži paši Budas vārdos parādās šīs džānas un to, ko mani ir darījis, tā kā mūsu spēkos ir izspriest pašiem.
But I think one of the important things about these džānas and things is not to think too much about it, because sometimes you get too much desire, I want to have džāna, but remember džānas are very, very profound things. And there's a large part of the Buddhist path before the jhanas, and that part is also very beautiful. Lots of wonderful experiences to be had, lots of peace, lots of happiness, lots of beauty. But when you get to jhana, it's like you're almost enlightened already, right? This is very, very profound. And I think this is one of the main reasons why many people don't talk about it, because it's very rare to find anybody who actually has these kind of experiences.
Pārlieku aizrauties ar džānām un nedomāt par tām visu laiku, jo tas tikai stiprināt mūsu vēlmes pēc tā, ka mēs to gribam dabūt un tam līdzīgi. Ir jāatcerās, ka līdz šīm džānām ir ļoti garš un visnotaļ arī skaists ceļš, kurā mēs arī gūstam mieru un skaidrību. Un iespējams arī tas ir iemesls, kāpēc par šīm džānām netiek runāt tik bieži, jo nav tik daudz cilvēku, kas spēja to tieši uzreiz jau lietot un praktizēt.
So yeah, so just enjoy the path and then let the džānas take care of themselves. Yeah.
Kā izbaudam ceļu un tam ļaujam, lai džānas parūpējas par tevi pašas.
Just a second, Kasper, I think, Rudy, do you want to say anything?
Uh-huh.
You okay? Okay, Kasper, yeah.
Es gribētu tādu pajautāt sakošu lietu. Jūs stāstot par pirmo džānu, nomainat sadaļu secluded from sensual pleasures uz secluded from the five senses.
Jā, tas ir tas arī stāstot.
Tā bija, jā?
Jā.
Un līdz ar to man ir jautājums, kā tad būtu iespējams sāstā punktā 21 par trešo džānu tā kurībās atradīšu kur rakstīt still feeling pleasure with the body.
Okay, I understand the question. Yeah. Okay, the thing here, this is the way this Pali, this is actually quite hard because this is about translating the Pali in the right way. So this gets quite complicated. But experiencing pleasure with the body here, this is kāyena sukkaṃ patisaṃ vedeti in Pali here. So what it means, patisangvadeti means to experience, sukha is happiness, and kayena quite literally means with the body. But you have to, the problem here is that the word body is used in many different ways in the Pali here.
Tātad būtiskais konkrētā termina tulkojums ir pieredzēt laimi ar ķermeni, bet tā lieta ir tā, ka vārds, kas ir kas apzīmē ķermeni, Pāli valodā ir lietots ļoti plašā nozīmē.
Now we'll give you some examples. For example, it says in the sutras, it says that you achieve the immaterial attainments, you touch the immaterial attainments with the body.
Un piemēram, Pāli tekstos parādās tāda frāze, ka mēs sasniedzam nemateriālos sasniegumus, pieskaramies šiem nemateriāliem sasniegumiem ar ķermeni.
It says in the sutra that you touch or you achieve the deathless, the amata, with the body.
Vai arī, ka mēs pieskaramies, sasniedzam to, vai tam, kas nemirst ar ķermeni.
And in those cases, it's very clear that the body does not refer to the physical body.
Un šajos piemēros ir diezgan skaidrs, ka neiet runa par mūsu fizisko ķermeni.
So the word body needs to be interpreted according to the context.
Un tādējādi vārds ķermenis ir jāinterpretē atkarībā no konteksta.
It's the same thing in English as well. In English, the word body can have many different meanings. For example, in English, you can talk about a body of evidence.
Tas tikai nestrādās noteikti, bet angļu valodā ķermenis tiek lietots arī kā lietiskais apkārzinējums lietiskajam pierādījumam.
So body in English, just like in Pali, can just mean a group, an accumulation, a heap of something.
Un ķermenis angļu valodā un Pāli valodā var vienkārši norādīt uz kaut kādu lietu sakopojumu.
In fact, the root meaning of the word body actually is just that. It means heap. It means a conglomeration.
Un faktiski šī, šī sakne, no kuras nāk vārds ķermenis Pāli valodā, vienkārši nozīmē sakopojumu vai kaudzi.
So the idiomatic meaning of the word body in this kind of context, it means direct experience.
Un tādēļ idiomatiskā nozīme ir tieši pieredze.
So just like you touch something with the body, if you experience something directly with the mind, it's called with the body because it is an immediate experience.
Un nobrīd tāpat kā ar ķermeni kaut kam pieskaroties, mēs tieši pieredzam arī tētiek lietots tiešas pieredzes apzīmēšanai šis, šī pieskaršanās līdzība.
So the meaning, as I understand it, in the third jhana, when it says kāyena, sukkan, patisankvedi, the meaning of that is just that it's the first time ever that you experience pure happiness. In the second jhana, there's still piti there, there's still rapture. It's only when you get to the third jhana that happiness stands completely by itself. So it is an immediate and direct experience of happiness. That's why it's called kāyena sukkan patisankvedeti.
Un manā izpratnē te šis termins tiek lietots tāpēc, ka trešajā jhana pirmo reizi tiek izbaudīta tīra laime, kāda tā ir bez kādiem iejaukumiem. Jo otrajā jhana vēl pastāv šis, tas, ko mēs tulkojam par sajūsmas aspektu, viņam piti, un tas nozīmē, ka laime vēl no tās tīrākajā formā izvest otrajā jhana.
But the reason why people like Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it as with the body is basically because he wants to be consistent in his translation here.
Un tas iemesls, kāpēc cilvēkā Bhikkhu Bodhi tulko to konkrētajā veidā, ir tāpēc, ka viņi vienkārši vēlas ievērot konsekvenciju savos tulkojumos.
If you look at other sutras, the sutras often make a distinction between the nāmakāya and the rūpakāya.
Un ja mēs praugāmies uz sutām, kas parāda atšķirības starp nāmakāya un rūpakāya.
Rūpakāya is physical body, whereas nāmakāya is mental body.
Tad rūpakāya ir fiziskais termins, savukārt nāmakāya ir mentālais termins.
And in this particular case, if you look at the commentary defines this as the body, meaning the nāmakāya, the mental body.
Un šeit termins tiek lietots šajā nāmakāya, nozīmē tātad mentālais termins.
So, yeah.
Tajā pašā laikā es gribētu pajautāt, tad ir atkal apraksts par 4. jhānu. Un šeit ir rakstīts tā, ka un atkal atmetot patiku un sāpes. Tad kas atmet patiku un sāpes?
And in the 4th jhāna's description there is description abandoning of pleasure and with the abandoning of pleasure and pain.
Yeah.
His question is, who is abandoning pleasure and pain?
Okay. It's a natural process, right? I think it says here, dukkha sukha pahana. I think it means from the abandoning of pleasure and pain, or due to, because of the abandoning of pleasure and pain. That's quite literally what happens. So just because of that, then you go into the fourth jhana. So it shows you the cause. It shows you the cause of the fourth jhana. It happens because of this abandoning. It's more like a process, right? It happens as a natural process.
Un faktiski šeit tiek aprakstīts dabisks process, un šī dabiskā procesa gaita nozīmē to, ka tajā brīdī, kad nav patikas un sāpes, notiek tas un tas.
So before, it's like before you enter jhana, you have your mind inclines in a certain direction. It inclines towards a very deep state of peace. And because the mind inclines towards that, then when you enter the jhana, it goes so deeply that it goes straight to the fourth jhana, for example.
Un, piemēram, ja mēs atrodamies ļoti dziļā stāvoklī jau un prātam ir kaut kādas tendences tajā brīdī, kad notiek ieiešana 4. Ķēdā, notiek aprakstītais process.
Okay, so, yeah. That was a bit technical towards the end there, but important questions, because these are questions that people have who study the suttas, yeah, because so these are important issues. Yeah, so.
Uz beigām palikām nedaudz tehniski, bet tie, protams, ir svarīgi jautājumi, kas cilvēkiem, kas mās sūtas rodas.
Yeah. Let's have a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back for the meditation in 5 minutes.
Tad šobrīd 5 minūtes pārtraukums, un tad atgriezīsimies uz meditāciju.